all these and other events for which we must awake to heal and fix and change the world. Tekiya Shavarim, Teruwa, Tekiya, Tekiya Gedolah.
Hayom haras olam, hayom yamid v'nishpat, kol yitzurei olamim, ashrei av yodei tenuah, Adonai bior panecha l'hamechon. Happy is the people who experience the sound of the shofar and walk in the light of God. King spoke of the difference of a thermometer and a thermostat. A thermometer records and registers the environment, and its mercury line always adjusts and adapts. It conforms with the temperature of the times. On the other hand, the thermostat controls the temperature of the room. The thermostat determines exactly how many degrees, how high or how low shall be the temperature of the environment. The basic question in life is, are you a thermometer or are you a thermostat? Do you want to conform to the world or do you want to transform the world? Do you want to be like your environment or do you want it to be like you? The phrase, keeping up with the times, means only the bland leading the bland. In recent years, we have seen a person who is a thermostat. He doesn't want to conform to the world. He wants to transform it. He has been going at great effort up and down the length and breadth of this land and even to foreign places to spread a prophetic message of love, of justice, of hope. It's why we said in promoting this service, stand up for justice and love and hope. And come and hear Bishop Reverend Dr. William Barber. Let's give him a rousing, radical welcome. Please rise.
Blessings, blessings. It is good to be with you today on this Jewish New Year, but on a new year that we should all consider. I want to thank God for the privilege of being here. I want to thank Rabbi Barry, his dear sister, and Hazel Dukes for allowing me to come to New York. You know, you have to thank all three of them for coming to New York. I want you all to know that I do know how to hang out in service post 4 hours because I'm Pentecostal on my mother's side. But when you get up at 3 in the morning to catch a 5:30 flight from Indiana, to be here. I had to step out for a minute so that I could do what that sign says, stay awake. And if any of you have seen me favoring my knee a little bit, don't worry, I'm just getting older. And when we were getting arrested down in D.C., they made us stand one time, about, what was it, 7 hours or something, 5 hours, whatever it was. And in that process, Rabbi kind of twisted it on a rock, and the tendons haven't healed, but they're healing. They felt much better when I grabbed your sister's hand and started walking around and shouting around the church. I didn't know you all did all that kind of carrying on. I'll tell you. But I'm so honored to be here, and I want to speak to you today from I know they did. That's right. They got it from the Jewish community. That's right. And Jewish people got it from the stars when the stars sung together. I think that's in the Bible somewhere, over in Job's book. But I want to speak to you, talk with you out of my heart, and to the thousands upon thousands of people that will see this service via videography. And I want to talk about a little bit from that first verse in Genesis, in the beginning. In the beginning, God created. In the beginning, God created. And I want to talk about creating space for all of God's children to thrive. I think it's around the sixth verse that talks about things were separated and what was put in between the space, between the waters, between the space. Walter Wink was a professor at Union Theological Seminary, and he wrote a famous trilogy. Do you well to pick it up sometimes, especially in times like these, where he defined demons not as some creatures that turn their head around and spin like on the movie The Exorcist, but demons as the systems that seek to damn and control and dominate men and women's lives, not just their souls. And his trilogy was entitled Unmasking the Powers, Naming the Power, Unmasking the Power, and one of them was also called Naming the Powers. And in those books, he declared in one, Engaging the Power, that the story that the rulers of domination societies, the story that they have told each other and their subordinates down through history, is what we might call the myth of redemptive violence. It is a theory that enshrines the belief that violence and oppression is creative, that violence saves, that war brings peace, that might brings right or makes right. It is one, said Wink, of the oldest continuously repeated stories in the entire world. And Walter Wink described in those trilogies, Unmasking the Power, Naming the Power, Engaging the Power, how this pervasive myth still is in the mores of Western culture especially. The belief that violence save is so successful because it doesn't seem to be mythic in the least. Violence, to many, seems to appear as just the way things are. Oppression is just the way things are. It's what works. Be mean and become president of the United States. It seems inevitable. The last and often the first resort in conflicts. And he goes on to say, if God is what you turn to, or nations turn to, or people turn to, when all else fails, then violence for many functions as God. Now, where did this come from? In the beginning, according to the Babylonian myth of creation, and the myth that they tried to push on the Jewish people when the Jewish people were in captivity in Babylon, was that Apsu, the father god, and Tiamat, the mother god, gave birth to the gods. But the frolicking of the younger gods made so much noise that the elder gods resolved to kill them, kill children, so that they could sleep. The younger gods uncovered the plots before the elder gods put it into action to kill Apsu. His wife Tiamat, the dragon of chaos, pledges revenge. Terrified by Tiamat, the rebel gods turn for salvation to their younger member Murdoch. And Murdoch negotiates, says Wink, a steep price. If he succeeds, he must be given chief and undisputed power in the assembly of the gods. Having extorted this promise, he catches Tiamat in a net, drives an evil wind down her throat, shoots an arrow and bursts her belly and pierces her heart. He murders her, and then out of her corpse, he creates the cosmos. Order in this mythology about creation is established through disorder. Order comes through violence. Therefore, violence is the way to rule the world. Oppression is the plan of God, according to that myth. Your weapons of war are instruments of God. And power, an abrasive, mean power, is the ultimate goal of anybody who wants to do anything in this world. The biblical story that both Jews, Christians, and others grab onto is diametrically opposed to all of this. The story we believe, the truth we believe, portrays a good God who creates a good creation. And chaos does not resist order. Good is prior to evil. And neither evil nor violence is a part of the original creation, but comes in later because of pride and a desire to control rather than to live together as brothers and sisters. If society follows the myth of domination, the Babylonian myth, and I'm sad to say too often we do, then human beings are naturally incapable of peaceful coexistence, because in order to have things, you must fight. If we follow the myth of denomination, order must continually be imposed upon us from on high. Men over women, masters over slaves, priests over laity, aristocrats over peasants, rulers over people, straight over gay, black, white over black. Unquestioning obedience, according to the Babylonian myth of domination, is the highest virtue, and order is the highest religious value. And no matter what you have to do to have order, oppress folk, bring a Holocaust, put folk in prison chains for 400 years, according to the myth of domination, it's all right if it brings a certain order that the oppressors like. But we don't believe this. No. Genesis 1:6 in one translation says, God said, let us create a space between the waters. And Rabbi Rashi says, in that God is making space for life. God creates from life, not death. The work of creation is always work of reconstruction, building a space where God's children can thrive, not where God's children are oppressed. And to believe in God's creation is to believe in life and liberty and love and justice, for these are the spaces where God's children can thrive. This is why any revolutionaries of any area in history who saw injustice and oppression always wanted to create something new because they knew that oppression was counter the creation desires of Almighty God. That's why Ella Baker, who was in the South but then came here to live in New York, once said, in order for us as poor and oppressed people to become a part of a society that is meaningful, the system under which we now exist has to be radically changed. That's creation talk. It means facing a system that does not lend itself to your needs and devising a means by which you change that system. People who believe in God, in the God of creation, have to oppose violence, and they have to name anything that destroys life and the spaces where God's children can thrive as violence. Amen. Violence against human beings and violence against God. That is why Coretta Scott King, a few days after her husband had been shot and murdered, someone asked her, how did she feel about violence? And Sister King said, well, my husband was killed and that's a form of violence, but I must remind you that starving a child is violence. Neglecting school children is violence. Punishing a mother and her family is violence. Discrimination against working people is violence. Ghetto housing is violence. Racism is violence. Ignoring medical needs is violence. Contempt for poverty is violence. And then she said, even an apathetic attitude that is silent and does not challenge the violence of this world is violence. In our world today, we need to recapture faith in creation. We need to recapture faith in the ability to begin again. We need to recapture the faith that we must be co-creators with God in creating spaces where God's children can thrive. So on your new year, you celebrate deliverance and possibility. In the Black tradition, we have watch night over into the new year, celebrating not just the new year coming, but the possibility of moving from whatever enslaves us to the freedom that God designed. Over the past 2 years, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, has reached out to communities in more than 41 states across this nation. I'm coming back from Indiana just yesterday, and we have met with tens of thousands of people witnessing the strength of and the moral courage in this trying time. We are gathering testimonies from hundreds and thousands of poor people who say it is time for us to begin again. To believe in creation, to be co-creators with God, and make space for all of God's children to thrive in. Yes, we must stop the attention violence that refuses to see the injustices and more so allows the myth of domination to have the microphone too long and the platform too many times. We must, in this new year, believe in God's good creation and that God is still the God that allows us to begin again. And God is still the God that is interested in having spaces where all of God's children, not some, but all of God's children, black and white and young and old and brown and yellow and red and Jewish and Palestinian and Muslim and Sikh and Hindu and gay and straight, all of God's children can thrive in. When we look at where we are, you hear a lot of, since 2010, 23 states have passed racist voter suppression laws, including racist gerrymandering and redistricting. I have to tell people all the time, the greatest racism, and hear me, be careful, I know it sounds funny, but the greatest racism of our time is not what the folk did in Charlottesville. That's ugly, that's vile, that's out there. Almost any politician will disagree with it if they have any inkling of decency. We are so hurt by the young lady, white lady who was killed. But the greatest racism and white nationalism is what goes on in our Congress and state houses every day. Policies that are passed, voter suppression that is passed, where people never use the N-word, but every day they pass policies that hurt black and brown and poor white people. We know that 23 states passed voter suppression law. We know that since the Voting Rights Act was gutted in June 25th, 2013, that we've had more attacks on voting than we've had since the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965. We have less voting rights today than we had in 1965. In 2016, we had 868 fewer polling places in black, brown, and poor white communities. We don't know yet what Russia did, but we know what racial voter suppression has done. That is what hacked our system. In Wisconsin, Trump won by less than 30,000 votes, but 250,000 votes were suppressed through racial voter suppression. And we are not talking about that as a nation on CNN and MSNBC. We wait to talk about racism when somebody calls somebody the N-word or Roseanne Barr says an ugly word, but that's not real racism and white nationalism. Real racism might look you in your face, never call you the N-word, but vote policies to undermine your community every day. And it must be unmasked because it is a vicious form of domination. And in the face of this, we must believe in the creation, and we must work to create spaces where all God's children can thrive in. And a country in the 400th year after slavery that's still wrestling with racism and its policies needs some new spaces. Did you know as of July 2017, 25 states have passed laws that preempt local governments from raising their minimum wage? That's racism, because all over the country, poor black people and poor brown people and poor white people were taking control of city councils and passing minimum wage increases, especially down in the South. So what did the legislatures do? They passed laws to say, even in your city, if you vote to have it, you can't have it unless you come through us. When we watch and see a stolen Supreme Court seat held open in a way we hadn't seen for 150 years, since the 1860s. And when we're about to go from the mighty RBG court to a KSC court, Kavanaugh, kangaroo, stolen court, and we're about to watch the fourth Supreme Court justice be nominated and appointed by two presidents that received less than the popular vote. We must believe in creation again and go to work. When we see the continued attacks on our democracy, the growing anti-immigrant backlash, the kidnapping, and I've become now, I don't say children, because you know and I know if those children were not brown, Latino children, nobody would be stealing them and putting them in incarceration like that. That's happened. That is outright racism and outright anti-immigrant. It is to scapegoat. And when we know that undocumented immigrants contribute $5 trillion to the U.S. economy over the last 10 years. They paid $13 billion in Social Security in 2010, but only received $1 billion in benefits. They also pay 8% of their income in state and local taxes, while the wealthiest 1% in this country only pay 5.4%. So we want their work, we want their money, but then we act like we don't want them. We must begin again. When First Nation and Indian people are still living under war policies that were passed in the 1800s. And when I went to Alaska and visit the Alaska natives, and saw what was happening to them, even today that's reminiscent of what happened in the Deep South in the 1960s. We must begin again. When we see the constant pitting of Palestine against Israel and Israel against Palestine, somebody must believe again in God's original intent for creation, in the possibility of beginning again and creating spaces where all of God's children can thrive. When today there are 64 million people working for less than $15 an hour, people can work 50 hours a week and still have to live in their cars with their children. In 2017, the 400 wealthiest Americans owned more wealth than the bottom 64% of the entire U.S. population. Or better yet, 204 million people, 400 people own more wealth than 204 million. People, just three individuals in this country possess a combined wealth of $248 billion, an equal amount of wealth as the bottom 50% of the country. Three people who make their wealth off the backs of the people they refuse to pay a living wage. In 2016, there was not one state or one county in the entire United States where somebody earning the federal minimum wage could afford a two-bedroom apartment at market rate. Not just New York, not one state in the country, not one county in the country. And yet we have the nerve sometimes to sing, America, America, God shed his grace on us. How can God shed his grace if we are not sharing our grace to the least of these, the poor and the broken? There are 2.5 to 3.5 million people living in shelters, many of them working, living in transitional housing, not just in big cities, but all over the country. And this population includes the highest number of women, children, and LGBTQI youth, veterans, and elderly. There are right now, even with the remnant of the Affordable Care Act, there are 32 million people who lack health insurance. While politicians get elected to Congress or get elected to the governor's office, or many times get elected to state houses, and they either get subsidies or free health care simply based on being elected, and then they get up in the morning and fight to keep the very people that elected them from having what they have. There are 140 million, not 39 million. The census report is coming out tomorrow. We're going to make comments on it. There are not 39 million poor people in this country. There are 140 million poor and low wealth people in this country. In America today, poverty is not 15%, 20%, but 43.5% of the U.S. population are poor or low income. 43%, almost 50%. 51% are children. That's 38 million children. 40% are adults between 18 and 64. That's 81 million adults. 42% of our elders. That's 20 million elders. 45% of women and girls. That's 73 million people. 39% of white people. That's 67 million people. 60% of black people. That's 25 million people. And interestingly enough, while poverty is often racialized, there are 40 million more poor white people than there are poor low-income black people. 37 million Latinos, 7.6 million Asians. 41% of Asian people, who are often stereotyped as not being poor, and are poor and low wealth in this country. 26% of Native Americans, that's 1.7 million people. 26% of people with disabilities, that's 5 million. People and transgender people are likely to experience poverty at a rate double that of the general population, and with transgender people of color experiencing even higher poverty rates. Somebody must hear the shofar. Somebody must believe that this is not what God intended in his creation and work to be co-creators with God to create spaces where all of God's children can thrive in. Did you know we imprison more people in America than any other country in the world? any other country in the world. The U.S. has the highest incarceration in the world, 5 times the average of any other wealthy country. Did you know every other wealthy country except America provides some form of free health care to all of its citizens? And yet we have the nerve to talk about American exceptionalism? Did you know the number of sentenced states and federal inmates grew from 188,000 in 1968, the year Dr. King was killed, to nearly 1.5 million in 2016. And 2/3 of these, Mother Dukes, are color, people of color. Did you know, we talk about Flint, we prayed about Flint, but 13 million U.S. households cannot afford water. 13 million. 12% of U.S. households cannot afford their water bill. Tens of thousands of households have their water shut off. Water that God made that has now been taken over by the myth of domination. Some of you in here, did you ever think you would have to buy water? Back in the day when you were a little kid running around drinking out of somebody's well? Huh? Think about that. And because the water is being shut off, children are being removed from homes and medical problems are increasing. 4 million families and children with families with children can buy every day at every gas station unleaded gas, but can't buy unleaded water. And there are 1,000 coal ash sites throughout the country where the toxins are leaking into the water, and politicians are hooking up with corporations saying, oh, coal ash is fine. It's all right. It's not going to kill you. When people are dying every day, somebody must hear the shofar. Awake. Believe that the Babylonian myth is not working, that the myth of domination is not working. We need a new story, the God of creation story, the beginning again story, the creating space for all of God's children to thrive. Did you know that right now 53 cents of every discretionary dollar goes to the military, and we can already blow the world up? I think one scientist said 40 times, another scientist said 75 times, another one said we could blow it up 150 times. Seems like once is enough, you know, really. We spend only 15 cents of every discretionary dollar on anti-poverty programs, and yet we have politicians right now who want to cut SNAP, who want to cut children's health insurance program, and who every time there is the debate, they blame the poor for the budget. They say they want to cut entitlements. They say that we either have to raise taxes. We don't have to raise taxes. We have to stop funding the war economy and militarism. And for those that say, well, do you mean we just don't have the military? No, I'm saying you can fund it and still take care of the people. $668 billion, 2017. That's what was spent on the war economy. Only $190 billion was spent on anti-poverty program. And right now, this new budget, they want to eventually, by 2023, long after Trump is gone. That's why we can't just make this about Trump. This is about a whole nother mythology, a whole nother theory, a whole philosophy. It's not just Trump, it's all of his enablers, because by 2023, they want to make sure that 66 cents of every dollar of federal spending goes into the war economy. And what does that mean already today? The top 5 military contractors in America earned on an average $19.2 million apiece. That's more than 90 times what a U.S. general earns with 20 years of experience, and more than 640 times what an Army private that we send into combat makes. I had some people tell me, don't put this, don't make this, don't talk about this stuff, Reverend Bob. Do you understand what you're doing? Yeah. Because it is as though America, in many parts, has decided to follow the Babylonian myth of creation, where violence and oppression and war is the way, rather than to follow the creation and the God that they swear, put their hands on and swear themselves into office every time they run. And then we have this Christian or religious nationalism religious capitalism, prosperity movement. And they claim that all God is concerned about is, are you against gay folk? Are you against abortion? Are you for prayer in the schools? Are you for guns? And are you for tax cuts? And I want to tell them sometimes this doesn't even line up with the Constitution, let alone the Bible. The Bible says our greatest moral vision ought to be to establish justice, to ensure domestic tranquility, to provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare. Everywhere I read, from the prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah to that Palestinian Jewish guy that I follow named Jesus, everywhere I read, they're talking about the poor and uplifting the sick and the broken and the least of these. And yet, because we're so committed to this kind of immoral values, and because it has such a hook now, even in the halls of Congress, congressional people will pass bills knowing that when they pass, for instance, the recent tax bill, 10,000 people will die every year from the provision in the new tax bill that takes away health care from 13 million people. That's policy violence. And sometimes we miss it because the Babylonian myth, the myth of domination, is so shrewd that it will allow us to focus on one person being shot at a time in the street by the cops, which we should focus on, which we should. But then it will cover up when one piece of paper signed by the Senate and the Congress and the President can kill 10,000 people in 1 year. Sound the shofar. Not just the shofar of a ram's horn, but the voices of our mouth. For I hear the ancient prophets say, cry loud and spare not. 250,000 people die every year from poverty. From poverty. Not because God, the God of creation, decides to open them up to an eternal heaven, but because of the violence and domination of this world. And so, yes, on this New Year's Day, we should be happy that God has given us another year to stand with God. That ought to be our joy. That God, as my grandmama said, has allowed our golden years to roll on a little bit yonder. Longer. That God decided in 2018 not to let our bed be our cooling board and our sheet to be our winding cloth. That God touched us early this morning with a finger of love and woke us up and stood us up, clothed in a portion of health and strength and clothed in our right mind. It must be that God wants us to do some co-creating with Him. That God. And we must reclaim our faith in the God of creation, the God that calls new things into being. We must be co-creators with God. I remember when I heard Bishop Tutu for the first time at Duke University, I thought he was talking directly to me, when his high, shrill voice, he pointed out over an audience of students and said, will you join God? That's the question. That's always been the question. Creation is reconstruction. Creation is beginning again. Creation is creating spaces for all of God's children to thrive in. And has creation happened before beyond just at the first chapter of Genesis? Yes. This kind of creation happened in 1880s when slaves and free issue blacks and abolitionists joined together to challenge the evil of chattel slavery, and they began to create a new world. It happened in the 1960s when Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics came together, black and white and students, to challenge the domination of Jim Crow together, and nonviolently, not with violence, but through redemptive suffering and nonviolence, the nation was reborn at places like the March on Washington, reborn on bridges in Selma, reborn in jails in Mississippi. Those places became the first days of a new creation in America and making space for all of God's children. In fact, towards the end of the 1960s, Dr. King spoke the language of creation when he said, listen, Our calling is to let us be dissatisfied until America will no longer have high blood pressure of creeds and anemia of deeds. Let us be dissatisfied. That's creation language. You see chaos, you don't get satisfied. You do like God, you brood over it. You start working on it. Let us be dissatisfied until the tragic walls that separate the outer city of wealth and the comfort from the inner city of poverty and despair shall be crushed by the battering rams of the fires of justice. Let us be dissatisfied until they who live on the outskirts of hope are brought into the metropolises of the daily security. Let us be dissatisfied until the slums are cast into the junk heap of history and every family will live in a decent sanitary home. Let us be dissatisfied until dark yesterdays of a segregated schools will be transformed into bright tomorrows of equality and integrated education. And you know where he got that from? Eternal dissatisfaction was a phrase he took from the Russian writer Zamenhof, who in his 1919 essay Tomorrow, he wrote that eternal dissatisfaction is the only pledge of eternal movement forward and eternal creation. We believe in a God who is always creating. Every day is a new day. Every flake of snow is a different design. Every morning is a new morning. Every breath is a fresh breath. And that's why our great teacher Howard Zinn told us, he said, it's never enough to remember the evils of the past. We must know, he said, that there are always two narratives, just like there are two stories of creation. He said, and we need to keep them both simultaneously in our mind and heart. The first is the painful reality that genocide and slavery are central to our country's history. But the second is a crucial reality that we can never forget. And that is that there has always been created in the country a powerful people's movement rising up against slavery and genocide and against war and militarism and racism and Islamophobia and misogyny and climate destruction and homophobia and so much more. Wherever there is darkness, God is somewhere working on bringing light forward. And God is saying to us in America today, saying to us in this room, saying to all who will listen to this by way of video, isn't it time for us to believe in eternal creation again? Isn't it time for us to begin again? Isn't it time for us to say, I want to use the rest of the new years that I have before me? I don't know how many they are. I don't know how many they are. They tell me if once you're 55, you probably have more days behind you than you have before you. I just turned 55, so I don't know. But is it not God? Is it not the Spirit as you marched around saying, I need some co-creators? We must believe that new years represent new possibilities. That we are not bound by yesterday's injustices or yesterday's failures. We must believe that newness is possible, that creation is possible, that for every problem I listed earlier, there is another way. There is what I call a we can creation possibility. We can challenge the systemic racism and overcome it. We can lift the poor. We can be a society where we pay everybody a living wage and guarantee basic income and ensure everybody health care and lift every child out of poverty. We can guarantee clean water and clean air and clean land. We can be a society where we turn from war economy to a war on poverty. We can recapture a moral vision that believed that love and justice and how we treat the immigrant and the poor and the sick and the hungry and the least of these are the most important value. Why? Because there's a God that created everything we see. And I believe what Harriet Tubman said to Frederick Douglass when Frederick Douglass was down in the dumps and about to quit in the middle of the abolition movement and he was sitting over in a corner with his head in his hand. Harriet Tubman in her own way sounded the shofar. She stood on the other side of the auditorium and said, Frederick, is God dead? And Frederick said when he heard that, when she raised that question of his own existential reality, when she raised that ontological question, he had to pick his head up out of his hand. He had to stand up some more. He had to fight again, and he did, and he and others did, and they were able to be co-creators with God. So my friends, we must become co-creators with God. How? We must preach to create spaces where all of God's children can thrive. We must love to create spaces where all God's children can thrive. We must teach to create spaces where all God's children can thrive. We must pray to create spaces where all God's children can thrive. We must protest if necessary to create spaces where all God's children can thrive. We must march to create spaces where all God's children can thrive. If necessary, we must go to jail to create spaces where all God's children can thrive. And surely we must vote. We must raise our voice and our vote to create spaces where all God's children can thrive. And we surely must never give in, but we must be forever faithful to the God of creation and do our part as co-creators of spaces where every one of God's children can thrive. So today, let us begin again. Let us begin our work again. Let us begin again until time is taken over by eternity and every valley is exalted and every straight place is made, a crooked place is made straight and every mountain is brought low. Let us begin again until the glory of the Lord is revealed and all flesh see it together and there are not spaces but a whole world and a whole eternity where God's children can thrive. God bless your heart.
Friends, I want to present to Dr. Barber something, because he spoke about being a chauffeur.
And I think it's fair to say, you'll all agree with me, he is a chauffeur.
Amen.
He's a human chauffeur. Calling out our country and everyone in it to awaken to what we were speaking about before. So we're going to present to you this chauffeur. Take it with you.
Yeah,
it's a real one. And let it stand for the fact that you took my words that I thought, shall the shofar be sounded and the people not tremble.
Oh,
so here you are. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
God bless you.
Thank you all.
And continue
thank
your
you.
Noble work.
Thank you. 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 Thank you.